own financial interests and their own clinging to power.
Finally, the role of COVID, I mean, the bravery of everyone going out, facing the military and also dealing with this pandemic. We have 20 seconds.
Yes, the protesters are trying to stick to some measures of wearing masks. What has been helping is that we're already wearing the masks for tear gas. So you see most protesters are trying to take some measurements. However, considering the situation and the health, the state of the healthcare system here in Sudan, we are facing a lot of risk that is a combination of both the military attacking us and the risk that we put ourselves in and our loved ones with the COVID and the pandemic.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Maureen. Please stay safe. Maureen Al-Neil, Sudanese activist, joining us from Khartoum, Sudan. That does it for our show. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland. Yeah, it is 8 a.m. and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I am the one and only Tammy, and with me is the lovely, the beautiful, the color-coordinated today, Althea. How are you, Althea?
I'm good. I'm so glad to be back. It's been a while since we've done the show, and it's exciting to be here. 2022, we didn't want to say that in our last episode, but that is the year that it is.
The one which you cannot say its name.
Yeah, and yeah, we're so glad to be back talking with you this morning. Yeah, lots to cover, lots to get into. I am a little color coordinated. Tammy hit her knee on the way in.
I did. It was, I don't know why, everything is dark in here, and then put a black chair in the darkness, and I just walked into it. They trapped me. They caught a Tammy.
Yeah. Yeah. God, laid a trap. Yeah. Hit a knee in the process.
Did you do anything fun for New Year's Eve?
I visited with a friend, but that's it. Nothing too crazy. I mean, I think a lot of folks canceled their plans with the Omicron going around.
Right.
So yeah, no, what about you? Well, you were supposed to be here New Year's Eve.
Yes. And I wasn't, because I was not feeling well.
Yeah.
And on top of it, I don't know why I keep thinking that I can do like a nap and then wake up. And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
I wanted to at least go on like a walk. I have this thing where I go to Peninsula Park on New Year's Eve and I just kind of like hang out there.
Yeah.
That sounds so weird, but I would go with the dog and there are other people there, and it's like, I don't know if it's a thing that it's very low key, but there's like a handful of neighbors and stuff, and it's just like very nice. And I thought I'd do that at least. I wasn't feeling, but I'm like, it's outside, you know? But yes, I fell asleep. I woke up, I think, after midnight for sure, with my dog just freaking out because there was fireworks everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that wasn't fun. I didn't like... She used to not really mind it, but now it like really freaks her out, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer, but I don't know. I'm really... I'm not conflicted about fireworks. Don't like them. Don't like... It's okay other people do. I don't... You know, it's okay.
I think it's funny because it's like right at New Year's Eve, it's like, great, fireworks. 10 minutes later, stop it. You missed your chance. If your clocks are wrong, cut it out. You got to save them for July 4th or whatever. Right. I don't want to hear them anymore. It's over. It's the new year.
I'll give you
10 minutes of joy.
I'll give you 10 minutes before, during, 10 minutes after, but that's it.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fine. Yeah, I'm so glad to be back. I was realizing it's been such a long time since we've actually gotten to record, because our last show was on the 24th. Which we pre-produced, and it was a look back at 2021. Still on the website, kbu.fm, if anyone's interested. It's a good app. But yeah, it's been just like a little bit of time.
Some would say I didn't see you since last year.
Whoa.
I remember that.
That actually is the first time someone has used that joke on me this
year. Yes, I did it. Thank you, Mrs. Koblin from fifth grade, for teaching me that joke. You
got it in under the wire. Yeah, well, okay, this is like off topic, but I just want to share it because I'm so excited.
Sure.
I found out that my...
Oh, right. This is amazing. I already know because I'm excited for how excited you got about this.
Yeah. Yes. I got really jazzed. I found out that my local library has a library of things, which I found because I found a DVD that I wanted to watch from, because I don't want to pay for the streaming service that has it. And then I realized that I don't have a DVD player. I was like, could I rent a DVD player? Anyway, I go down this rabbit hole. Turns out I can get a, I can borrow a knife sharpener. And and I gotta go out to Wilsonville to get it. But I'm so excited to sharpen my knives. Mostly because I'm, you guessed it, afraid of doing it. Because I don't like the sound. Ooh. But of course, you know, a dull knife is so much more dangerous than a sharp one. But there's so much like stuff in the library of things. If you don't, you know, get on your local website, your local library's website, you could be throwing an Elmo-themed birthday party with like a telescope and a fog machine and a DVD player and a food dehydrator, you know?
Whoa, what? The food dehydrator?
You could get busy. Yeah, they have a lot of like kitchen gadgets that are too expensive to own, but would be fun to do every once in a while.
That's very cool. Interesting.
So, yeah, so I'll report back. I'll report back next week with how the knife sharpening goes.
Yeah, thank you.
I can't say I spent a pretty penny on my knives, obviously, because I don't keep them up. But I was watching a video of a guy, and it's an electric knife sharpener.
Oh, I thought it was like the rock, like the stone that you... Okay.
I can find one outside. I'm just kidding. No, it's electric. And I was watching a video of a guy doing it, and he's like, yeah, you should do this every couple days. I was like, every couple days? Mm-hmm. I've owned these knives for maybe 4 years and never sharpened them.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cooking anything that's tough to cut through is a real burden.
Well, I mean, the whole thing with cutting is that you want it to be sharp so that it doesn't bruise the food. It actually cuts through it. Like, you can see it the most with like herbs. Like, mm-hmm. if you cut herbs and you have a dull knife, it's gonna be like a mishmash of
I've started growing green onions, and that's definitely been a thing. But yeah, with a dull knife, you know, you have to use more pressure and mm-hmm. like, you know, when and
bruising
that can
it.
Bruising the fruit, but then also putting yourself in more danger of cutting yourself. Oops. Anyway, that's something that I'm excited about.
That is exciting.
Wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like, you know, there's so many... People put so much pressure on January, you know? It's like, new things. We're doing new things. And I feel like I don't... Changing myself, that sounds hard. Changing my surroundings by sharpening my knives and or dehydrating some fruit, that sounds fun.
I'm excited about the food dehydrator.
Yeah, they also have like an air fryer, like a juicer, what? You know? Fancy, fancy stuff. I always wanted to try an air fryer.
That's pretty cool. You can like borrow it, meal prep, and then give it back.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
They have like camping supplies too. Telescopes, cameras, all kinds of cool stuff.
At the library. Man, I like that. It's really, you know, falls into the whole, like, our theme with the gap of kind of filling the gap and...
Filling the gap in my life where a knife sharpener should be.
And non-bruised herbs as
well.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, that's my little spiel.
That's great. That's the community shout-out to the library.
Shout-out to the library. Well, as folks who listen to the show know, we like to do two parts. And so in this first part, we're doing a little bit of local news roundup. And in the second part, we'll have our community question around 8:30, where folks are invited to call in and chat with us. So yeah, let's get into this roundup. Tammy, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I was looking at some information that it seems like a lot of people in January and December have this thing of predictions and looking back and then making predictions. And I've seen a couple of articles. Well, and also, I think that we are all aware, especially folks who listen to the show, because we, you know, talked about it, about the soaring numbers of people, of victims from gun violence in 2021, and kind of what's going to happen around it.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, we used to have and I can't find it, that's fine.
The Gun Violence Reduction Team?
Yes, the Gun Violence Reduction Team, and now it's been disbanded, and a new one is coming out from the Portland Police Bureau, the Focused Intervention Team, or FIT, and the Community Oversight Group to replace the Gun Violence Reduction Team. And, you know, it's on the website, they have all the members, which is pretty, you know, great as far as transparency and just kind of see who's doing what.
The Oversight Committee.
Yes, of the Oversight Committee. Yeah, yeah. And they even have and they have the information for upcoming meetings. It seems like there's one January 13th at 5 p.m. And yeah, so I was just personally interested in maybe attending one of these meetings just to kind of see what the conversation, like where the conversation is going, since I couldn't find like too much information about them as far as like what they're doing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they are going to, I think, start patrolling the streets in some capacity in January, so this month.
Yeah, I think the 19th is when they are done with training and mm-hmm. and out there. And it's interesting, you know, to see this because, right, the Gun Violence Reduction Team was disbanded in summer 2020 from push from the public because it had this, like, disproportionate policing of Black Portlanders and had been basically been a rebrand of the Gang Violence Team. Like, it had the Gang Violence Reduction. It had the same initials. So, hey, kudos, because it has different initials now. But, of course, we saw a really real spike in gun violence and homicides in 2021 in Portland. Partially because, I mean, the police bureau, they don't respond to 911 calls. So
911, please hold.
911 emergency? I didn't hear about an emergency. You got to hold on. So, yeah, I think the dispatchers are still there. I think it's just the response that is not especially timely, and you know there's a lot of competing factors that contribute to gun violence, mm-hmm. obviously, but not having a police presence focused on it is maybe an issue. I don't know.
Well, then there's that tension of you know what we've been talking about for like how police presence might not necessarily be what the community wants, and then mm-hmm. you know that was vocalized and that will disband it. So now what? So I'm interested to see if this is a solution that would be reasonable and kind of like in the framework of what the community is asking for, because there's mm-hmm. definitely, again, it's like to say there isn't a problem is not realistic, especially to the people who are victims of this. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of victims. So something needs, and like there's no process that has that at least I don't think that there is a process that shows both accountability and like kind of like, I mean, I know you can't fix it or anything, right? Because mm-hmm. once a life is gone, is gone. But someone needs to be like held accountable,
yeah,
in a timely manner and have like some sort of process. And yeah, just, you know, the families aren't gonna, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think it's, I mean, to I can appreciate that they like ripped it out and started from scratch. I'm sure that it's based on similar foundations, mm-hmm. and obviously police are still police, but it's not a rebrand of it. It is that this team was like gone for a certain amount of time, and new money, new people with a community oversight board mm-hmm. are now, and new people are now on this team that were not previously, I think, with the GVRT. So, you know, as much insofar as police can be changed, I think ripping out the problem and starting from scratch with some kind of way to address it is at least a step.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to put it out there that when I first heard of like community oversight groups and when it comes to policing and communities and stuff, it was at a talk. It was a lecture. Max Ramirez, I think his name is, came to town. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about it from the Pan-African Committee or something in D.C., mm-hmm. and he was doing a tour. And he was talking about what community oversight committees can be and what it means to the community and what it means to have a police presence and so how some communities are just straight up, like, occupied, you know?
Right.
And it was fascinating. And I'm just, like, sitting there like, wow, yeah, there can be a different way of things. And it's just unbelievable for me to see this actually come into fruition in the mm-hmm. same city where he talked about that. So, like, that just goes to highlight the community effort and, like, the grassroots effort. And, again, like we mentioned in our conversation with Claire Rosado, once things happen in a community or in a state or, you know, in a city, it's just like a blueprint for other states, communities, and cities to follow suit, you know? So this is really, I'm interested to see where this develops, how this develops in the upcoming year.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how empowered this community oversight group is, right? Because that's part of what has been at the root of issues. I mean, obviously there's a multitude of issues with the way the Portland Police operates, but one of them was that the Community Advisory Board, whatever that correct acronym is, was not, whatever their oversight board was not empowered to question basically in any way a police person's like account of what happened. They can't subpoena records.
Right.
They didn't have any kind of like enforcement power or even real investigative power. And the ballot measure in 2020 created a community oversight board that would have that power. That hasn't been put in place yet, because it is this like process and disentangling it from the settling with the Department of Justice and all of this kinds of stuff. But I mean, I think that there is a root there, right? Like that the community should have a voice. Let's make sure that that voice is empowered to make the change that the community wants, and that you're not just putting people out there, you know, saying that they can have this opportunity to have a voice in the way that communities are policed, and then not give them any power to make that happen. And then when people get frustrated, they have to take the fall for it, you know?
Right. And and again, back to the community, in the community, the word community and community oversight is the mass, you know, if we can ask for that, or excuse me, we can demand that, you know? Mm-hmm. So very exciting to see how this turns out. Not exciting. I'm sorry. We can't say that in 2022. We just have to, we will see how this plays out. I have no anticipations whatsoever.
Yeah. I think with this and with any number of things, just, an interested glance.
And yes, thank you. I like that.
Not giving anything full attention or expectation, because goodness, if we haven't been let down so many times.
Yes. And again, there's that, there is going to be the upcoming meeting on January 13th at 5 p.m. The information is on the website. I think we can share this with listeners on our website.
Yeah, I can,
right?
I can link it on our
fantastic
show notes. Should we pivot to that second item we wanted to
mention? Oh, yeah. There's more. There is more. Filling the gap between journalism and politics. Mash it together. Mash it together. What do you get?
New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof.
Yay!
Wanting to run for Oregon governor.
You got it.
Not being allowed to do it. Uh-uh. And now he is appealing that. I haven't been following this too closely, partially because my brain is not ready to compute elections again, but I know that they're coming, so I need to get on board.
I know, it's like the Jaws theme song. It's like you hear in the background. Dun, 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 dun.
2021, I wasn't ready to talk about it. 2022, I am. But yeah, if you haven't heard, I feel like, and Tammy pointed this out, it's kind of made outsized amount of news. Yeah. I think a lot of like large publications from the East Coast have been paying attention to Nicholas Kristof because he was a New York Times columnist who's from Oregon, who said that he's going to run for governor because Kate Brown's on a term limit, and that he's going to come in and solve all our problems.
Yeah, and he wrote a book about it too, apparently.
He did? Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and it's...
I'm reading to do this weekend.
I was reading...
is it about what's wrong with Portland?
Exactly. It's about what's wrong with Oregon. Excuse me. It's the whole... He's from Oregon. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in all of his interviews that I watched, the first 5 seconds that he... You know, I was born in Oregon. That's how you start everything. And it's just like, tell me you haven't been here in a long time without telling me you haven't been here in a long time, you know?
Yeah.
But
point of clarity, he spent the last 20 years in New York, traveling around, being a journalist.
Which is
great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Love that. Know? But basically, Secretary of State Shamia Fagan reviewed it, said, the Constitution says you have to live here for 3 years before you run for governor. And he had tried to claim that the family farm in Yamhill County and like coming to Oregon on vacation counted as residency. Here's my bit about this, because I like, right, national publications are like, whoa, he wants to go from journalism to politics and Oregon won't let him. No.
The woke state of Oregon won't allow. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, but it's like the one thing that like urban and rural Oregonians can agree on is like we don't need some like East Coast elite coming in here trying to run things. Portland elite, maybe, but the East Coast elite, I don't think so.
There is something. So in his ongoing thing, like his whole spiel is that, and again in the 5 minutes in like the first 20 seconds of his thing, I'm from Oregon. And all my friends are dead. And that's how...
What?
Exactly. It was very jarring.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, and again, you know, and his whole spiel again is about how a lot of his friends either died of overdose or, I guess, passed while experiencing houselessness. And what else was there? I think maybe... Well, those are the two things. Basically, just like kind of like, you know, those are the big things that he was mentioning. And there wasn't, like, too much context. Again, I didn't read his book. I just listened to his interview. So I was just taking him at face value by the things that he was saying to the camera.
Yeah.
And it was, even, like, the clip, it was his, like, campaign, I guess, clip, for lack of better words. It's, like, very, you know, I don't know. It's, like, it doesn't seem very... seems a little disingenuous considering you haven't like I don't know, maybe it has been contributing to the state in some capacity and I just
not
don't
Texas.
Know about it.
He hasn't been voting here. He voted in New York in 2020.
You gotta pay the troll toll. You gotta pay the troll toll if you wanna. Yeah.
Let's keep calling it that. Love that. when is troll toll day? April 14th or something?
You gotta pay the troll toll.
I usually do my troll toll on troll toll day, personally.
See, now I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, sorry. Talked too much about taxes.
But speaking of taxes, I think that so he's filed to organize a candidate committee, and I think he's actually already been raising money.
He raised $2.5 million, which is more than the other, he's a Democratic candidate, we should say. More than the other two announced candidates, current State House Speaker Tina Kotek and Treasurer Tobias Reid have also announced, and they've only raised about $1 million each. So we'll see how far his big money gets in Oregon, which is the wild, wild west of campaign funding, by the way. Haven't gotten to talk about that in about 2 years.
But there's little
to no restrictions.
We
like,
got
Shania Fagan just barely reining him in and saying, like, literally just come live here for 3 years and then you can do it. Like, a governor's term is 6 years. You don't even have to move right now.
Right.
You can move in 2025 and you'd be here long enough to run for governor when you're eligible, you know?
It's very paternal. Like, you know, I'm sitting here about whatever, what is it, 300 miles away, 3,000 miles away, and I'm just, you know what, let me just come in here and try to tell you how to do things. And it's like, I mean, it's not, it's just, that's what rich people think they can do. Like,
I mean,
straight up, you know?
Maybe he would do a great job, but it is genuinely difficult to tell.
Mm.
Especially, not that, you know, we should always be electing people that have a track record in politics, but when the track record and the rhetoric that we get is just like, hey, there sure are problems going on, and, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we all didn't have those problems? Just like listing all of these kind of like social welfare things, like, oh, our education is bad, and also addiction crisis, and it's like all of those things are very real problems, but it's like not getting any of like how do you want to solve it.
Because
I think you'd be hard pressed to find anyone running for office that wouldn't say those things are a problem.
And that's kind of a thing. It's like it feels very exploitative. Like,
yeah,
people are suffering. Like, there are people suffering, and this is like you're using this as campaign talking points. And the reason that a lot of people are suffering is because of local government inaction or just like straight up misuse of funds, you know? So I'd love for him to tell me what he's going to do. And I'd love for all the candidates to tell me what, and they're going to, because it is, like you said,
primary
time,
season coming up in May. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, so you love it. You love it. I saw your eyes lit up like that. I saw it. I saw that.
A shock to the system. But yeah, he is going to appeal the decision that says that he can't run for governor here. I believe in the appeal or in the original kind of like protestation of this examination, he said that the 3-year residency requirement was like an unfairness based on, was like, I don't know, racially bad, was like racist. And then Shamia Fagan kind of countered with, well, no, it's an equity issue. If you haven't like been in Oregon for 3 years, like why, 3 years is not that long. I don't want to say that like 3 years isn't like an insignificant amount of time, but if you're like, I'm going to be governor, I better live there. I better like know what's going on.
Right.
You know? Especially because like, I don't know, if you've been outside of Oregon, if you know, you say you're from Oregon, you say you're from Portland metro area, people are like, oh, Portland.
Yeah.
Like, are you okay? There was one person that I saw over the summer and they're like, oh, Portland. I've always wanted to go. I hear the breweries are great. And I was like, you just want to talk about beer? I was like, yeah, I think the breweries are great. You should totally come and tour them all. That's like a great idea, you know? My one woman tourist. Tourist attraction. But people are like, oh, Portland, I've heard, you know? And it's sorry, like, I don't know what to say to that, you know? It's not really a true encapsulation of the whole city, whatever
it's like,
makes.
Yeah, everything you heard is true. It rains here a lot.
It does rain.
It rains a lot.
People, they ride their bikes. You don't see as many handlebar mustaches anymore.
I don't. Womp. I do not mind that.
Yeah,
I don't mind.
I mean,
that.
The Portlandia era is over for sure. But I don't know. I'm getting off track. But just that, like, whatever makes national news is not really like that. That's what people's perception is of Portland, or it's that we have great beer. And both of those things, like events that make national news, definitely happen, and we definitely do have great beer, but there's like a whole spectrum in between. And just to try to like diagnose us from really far away, it's like,
and again, it's like, and I'll talk specifically just for Portland. It's like, sure, you can have your vacations, and let's say you have a family farm right outside of Portland and you go in it and stuff. Yeah, and if you, without any nuance, without any context to like this, to everything that's happening here, I think it's a little, it's easy to make the wrong assumptions. Mm-hmm. You know, assumptions, you know, they make things out of you and me. So to not even understand.
Sorry, I just got that. Keep going.
To not even understand like the mutual aid funds that we have, mm-hmm. the open, like the fridges, the people that cook inside in their homes and just go and feed people just like out of their own volition without being part of any kind of organization.
Yeah.
The community building, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just there. I don't know. There is so much more, especially in light of government inaction. There's so much that the people, the communities are doing to like, to try to like, A, hold someone in government accountable, and B, try to at least try to make a person's day a little bit simpler by mm-hmm. giving them like a sandwich or something, right?
Yeah.
Or like, there's the, what is it? The harm, the ones that, I forgot the organization. They're like a freelance organization and they help out with like Narcan and stuff like that.
Yeah. Harm reduction. I think that's what it, the practice is called, yes. Not what the organization is
right.
called.
Right. And to not, understand that there's that to not know of these organizations is one thing, but to just assume that no one is doing anything is just like so disingenuous, and just, it's shocking to me. It's like you're discrediting hard work, money, energy that people that don't have it are putting into trying to like mm-hmm. take care of what, you know, our elected officials aren't.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say that you want to go and be one of those elected officials. Get out of here.
Yeah. I don't know, just to like, I think, If there's ever like a problem that you're observing or like, wow, someone should really do something about that. Mm-hmm. Somebody probably is. There's
right.
been a lot of people thinking about the problems that we have for a long time. Have they ever always had all the answers? No, but it's not that, you know, you're the only person observing this. You're not the only person
who's
ever encountered this problem by and large. So, you know, and there are obviously like major statewide issues. All of our unemployment systems are so old.
And we saw how they crashed in 2020.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's so, like, statewide stuff, obviously, it's not all blueberries and paper planes, okay? But that there has been movement and things that have been, like, significant progress that have happened, not even just in the 20 years that Nicholas mm-hmm. Kristof hasn't been here, but in the past, like, 2 years that have measure, I believe 105 the decriminalization measure, that the non-unanimous juries are now banned. You know, everything that all
preschool
that's,
for all.
Preschool for all. Like, these are all things that are addressing those issues. And also, I would like to say, like, I think that we have an expectation that whoever is in the executive position, whether that's a mayor, whether that's like the county chair, whether that is the governor, whether that's the president, we expect that they have a lot of power. And that's not always the case. Like, empowered alone, Kristoff does not have the ability to change all of these things, right? Like, I think that would, I'm sure that all of our like head officials would like to make it known. It's like, hey, if I could change this, if I had all the power to change this one thing, I'm sure that I would, but I don't, you know? And part of what can make a governor more effective is making any kind of executive more effective is having connections to legislators, having connections to communities, to be able to organize and to make movement at all levels rather than a top-down type of deal.
And I call that trickle-down liberation.
Trickle-down liberation. And so, you know, not to endorse anybody who's been in state politics longer, not to say that they could do better, but having relationships and being able to communicate with people who have been here for the past 20 years, who have been doing this work, and being able to, like, make those connections, make those alliances, and be able to have a more holistic solution, which will have to come from the legislature, is all part of it. You know, like, that is a detraction for me, that you, like, don't have relationships with people that, you know, you
well,
can
that's
try
the,
to mobilize.
The whole point of the community building, right?
Yeah.
And you have, and again, you have to be here in order to make these community connections with the community leaders. Because, again, each community, like, we're all kind of like a piece in this mosaic, right? So it's like different people wield different power in different communities and different circles, right? So to kind of know where you fit into that is very, very important. Because to just, again, try to be like, I'm going to make this ice cream sundaes every Tuesdays, right?
It's not like Sundays. Sundays and Tuesdays.
Well, I'm trying
to. No one's thought of this.
It's just something that's just like, you know, but you got to figure out, like, you know, you got some people that don't want ice cream, or some people that are lactose intolerant, some people that are vegan. So it's just like kind of understanding all the needs and the nuances that, again, like, build our city.
Yeah.
And without that, it's just, it's very silly and paternalistic to think that you know better.
Yeah, and I don't know. And just to, like, come back to the rhetoric of it, you know, like, I understand that this is not perhaps the time in the campaign to be like, here are my action items, but also, like, but I think that there is, you know, across the state, broad agreement on what some of our issues are. Like, a lot of them we can come to consensus on,
right?
You know, the addiction crisis is bad. The unemployment and, like, the way that, like, labor is happening right now, somebody should do something about that. The environment, climate change, drought, wildfires, how do we address all that stuff? Boy, the pandemic sure is going. Someone should do something.
The potholes on the streets. Like, it's really, you know, it's like really just like, there's just so many. I mean, I know you were like going up.
Statewide.
But still.
ODOT,
you know,
needs to get it together. That we can also agree on.
Transportation is what I'm trying
to
say.
There you go.
Excuse me. Transportation. But the potholes fall in that. They don't.
Right, that there are, but that,
yeah.
You know, like, rattling off these problems is easy to do, and I'm not running for governor, you know.
Not yet.
I'm not old enough, I don't think. Who knows? No, just kidding. This is how I'm announcing it. Just kidding. Don't worry, I'm not. I'm here to yell from the sidelines about how this New York Times columnist doesn't need to be in charge. And here's the thing, I don't even think that it's like a uniquely Oregon reaction to it, you know. I think that any state that has, you know, whatever celebrities of repute that they create come back in and they're like, you know what, we should be doing something different than everything that you've been doing. I think most states would be like, what the heck, like, you've been gone for so long, you don't even, like, have you had to sit through any of the heat waves or cold snaps? No, you haven't, you know. Not that that is what makes a governor,
right?
But boy, I hope that they do talk about that.
Well, they say a good leader is one that leads by example, you know.
Yeah,
and Yeah, I think that's where I'm going to leave that.
Yeah. Well,
3
anyway.
Years. That's all they're asking. Three years, bud.
3 years. That's discrimination. It's like, I don't know.
They used his own logic against him for that one.
Yeah. Definitely. Anyways. All right. This is The Gap. If you're just tuning in, I'm Althea. Tammy's here with me. We're going to hit a quick musical break. And when we come back, our community question where folks can call in. KBOO Portland. That's where we are. Stick with us.
Thank you. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy. With me is my co-host, Althea. And we are going to our second part of the show, where we ask you, the listener, a community question. And we would love it if you would call in and contribute to the conversation at 503-231-8187. And today, our community question is, kind of piggybacking on what we were just talking about, is how to keep hope alive in movement building.
Mm-hmm. When you want to see change, how do you keep the energy to keep going? You know, I think that it is, especially like this time of year, I feel like there's all of this pressure to have energy and to have willingness to either change yourself or to change the ills of the world. And, you know, it can be exhausting. And so thinking about, what do you do personally to sort of like keep that hope alive? What does your community do? We'd love to hear about it. 503-231-8187.
Yeah, and let's not forget the pandemic too, you know, because we're always in that bubble or that extra layer of and pandemic. So even whatever we used to do might not be what we can do. Heck, getting together was probably very like regenerative for people and now can be very anxiety producing for some people.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I do, while we get people on the line, I wanted to read a really, really quick part from Huey P. Newton's Revolutionary Suicide. And it's kind of talking about this and gives it a bit of a perspective. Indeed, we are all black and white alike, ill in the same way, mortally ill. But before we die, how shall we live? I say with hope and dignity. And if premature death is a result, that death has a meaning reactionary suicide can never have. It is the price of self-respect. Revolutionary suicide does not mean that I and my comrades have a death wish. It means the opposite. We have such a strong desire to live with hope and human dignity that existence without them is impossible. When reactionary forces crush us, we must move against those forces. In another part, he says, many so-called revolutionaries in this country, black and white, are not prepared to accept this reality. The Black Panthers are not suicidal. Neither do we romanticize the consequences of revolution in our lifetime. Other so-called revolutionaries cling to an illusion that they might have their revolution and die of old age. This cannot be. I expect to live through our revolution, and most serious comrades probably share my realism. Therefore, the expression revolution in our lifetime means something different to me than it does to others who use it. I think the revolution will grow in my lifetime, but I do not expect to enjoy its fruit. That would be a contradiction. The reality will be grimmer. And again, that's from Huey P. Newton's Revolutionary Suicide. And when you ask that question, Althea, of how to keep hope alive in a movement, in movement building, to me, I was thinking, honestly, the thing that keeps me moving and keeps me hopeful is that I'm not going to finish this. Like, I will not be the person to finish this, and continuing on the work and the study and the movement, that's the hope that it will continue, that the legacy will continue on. I mean, like, look at us on the airwaves right now. Like, people some are dead now. They created this institution that we're now, like, continuing on. Yeah. 50 plus years. That's a long time. 1968, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it, you know, continues, then that's for me keeping hope alive. And we'd love to hear your comments and input. 503-231-8187.
I really appreciate the quote, and I think that it's like, it's an important reflection to have, and it makes me think about something that I've kind of like pointed out to people when talking about like climate crisis and stuff like that, that I think that sort of the historical fictionalization of the civil rights movement, by which I mean, how does history tell the story of the civil rights movement? What is it that most people learn? There, Martin Luther King is this like outsized figure, not to say that he didn't have a major impact, because he definitely did, but that the movement was successful because there was so many people involved in so many small ways, like moving things forward, right? And that I think that with any number of crises, climate crisis, racial justice, there is some kind of expectation that there will be one figure that finally takes us to where we need to be, or that we will finally, there's one person that we need to galvanize around, and we'll all just agree, and their force will be so powerful so as to change these issues that we're having. And I think that the reality is, as that quote was saying, you know, that it is the work of everybody. It is not necessarily something that you will see come to fruition, but it's not one person's work that makes all the difference, right?
Also, when it is one person, they usually get assassinated. Just putting that out there. Yeah, but we do have some callers on the line, so I'm going to take care of that real quick.
Yeah, would love to hear what folks think about all of this. If you are interested in chiming in, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. If you're just tuning in, this is The Gap on KBOO Portland. We're talking about, how do we keep hope alive in movement building, individually, in community. We're talking about a quote from Huey P. Newton, some of these types of things. If you have thoughts, 503-231-8187 is that number. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this in the first week of January here.
And we do have Liz on the line. How are you, Liz?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All's well. Great to have you here.
Good. Happy New Year. Oh, I just wanted to comment that you were talking about the, I agree that it's all of our work, and yet we have an elective thing that coming up, the governor, and Nicholas Kristof wrote a book called Tightrope. Have you read that book? Have either of you read that book?
No, I don't think we've read it.
Oh, anyway, I look, and I mean, we have a ways to go before we hear from all the candidates, but that book is a very good book. He grew up in Yamhill County, rural Yamhill County near here, and in the book, he traces the lives of kids he grew up with here,
mm-hmm.
and the economic conditions, the jobs available to their parents, and how these kids are very vulnerable to, you know, like the rhetoric of anyone, including the former president that we had, 45. I don't know. I need to hear more from what he says, but just based on that book, it's a very intelligent position, and he wrote it with his wife, who I have a lot of respect for, both he and his wife. Anyway, just now, I would vote for him based on that book, but I have to hear more of what everyone says. So thank you for the topic, and Happy New Year to you both.
Yeah, thank you, Liz.
Happy New Year, Liz.
Little context before the break. We were talking about Nicholas Kristof and how he is appealing the ruling that he cannot run for governor in this state. But right now we are talking about, you know, keeping hope alive and movement building. If you'd like to call in, 503-231-8187 is that number.
Althea, how do you keep hope alive when you try to, I mean, you built the newsroom, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's a type of movement, a force, you know, community led.
Yeah. I mean, I have to, part of it I think is setting boundaries, you know, and that the days of the week that I do not have the job, I get to do other stuff. And yeah, because I think that, you know, it is entirely possible to stare into the void, and the void will stare back at you and make it feel like it's hard to get anything done, whether in your personal life or in the change that you want to see. So I think, you know, giving yourself the permission to step away, to refresh, to be able to have the energy to come back, I think is really important.
Yeah, it's definitely important to stay, to restore yourself when you're giving so much of yourself.
Yeah.
And we do have a caller on the line. Can you hear me? Oh, I don't think I... Can you hear me?
Hello.
There you go. How's it going?
You know, it's a little bit wet out there and kind of dark and dreary and cold, and, you know, it's miserable.
Sure.
Describing my heart. No, I'm kidding.
But at the same time, we have to anticipate that because, you know, that's the nature of reality, is it changes all the time. So for me, to keep hope alive, what I do is I anticipate that things are not going to be as they are. There's going to be a change coming, and try and find whatever kind of grace I can in that change. So, you know, to keep hope alive for me, that's a big part of it. The other thing that I do is I try and recognize that nature just keeps hope alive constantly. It doesn't have to wonder if it's going to be hopeful. And my favorite example of that is a spider, because a spider will make a web. It doesn't know what it's going to catch. It doesn't know when it's going to catch something, or it doesn't even know if it's going to catch something, but it makes that web anyway. So, you know, when you're feeling like maybe you're not going to get a big juicy bug, then just like reflect on things for a minute that, you know, nature lays out the roots, it puts out the leaves, it puts out its branches, it does all of the work, knowing the rains are going to come, knowing the sunshine's going to come, knowing the bugs will come. And so, you know, when you're worried, just for me, I just reflect on nature and see the hopefulness of nature. Even when a seed is falling and getting crushed beneath the snow, that seed is hopeful that the snow will nurture the germ. And even when the seed is being crushed and actually breaking, and it feels like that seed is dying under the weight, that germ sparks the life that's going to be next year's flower. So, you know, just I hope you can be graceful in the transitions and look to nature for your hopefulness.
Wow, I really like that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love your show. Thanks for everything you folks do for us.
Yeah, thank you. Happy New Year.
I love the idea of grace, because you got to show, you know, yourself too, in the I don't know, and like the when that fear or whatever it is, it kicks in to just kind of like, you know, give yourself grace, and I love that. Just trust. You know, one thing that comes to mind is like, the sun is gonna rise tomorrow. You know, mm-hmm. and like, what does that mean? That means that like this. I hate to say like, but like this too shall pass, and something else will come with the passing of this situation. You know, and
yeah.
And I love the word grace. I love that because that's really, for I don't know if it like really stuck out for me when the caller was speaking, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, and one thing that I kind of got from it, especially in talking about, you know, the seed, I think it's like the not knowing what the impact will be, you know? And even if that, for example, the seed does not, you know, germinate, does not turn into a flower, it still becomes, you know, nutrients for a fungus or in the soil for the next thing to grow from it. And I think as much as, you know, we can learn and understand society, the world, everything that's going on, we still can't predict the future
right
entirely. And
you know what they say?
What do they say?
You can prepare a pretty picnic, but you can't predict the weather, Miss Jackson.
Oh. I really like that we're talking about going outside. I was like, it was so dark this morning when I left the house, and I just had to remind myself, like, summer will come again. It will be sunny. It will be bright in the morning. You'll feel the sunshine on your face again. Like, it's going to come, you know?
Looking forward to that sundress weather.
Oh, we love sundress weather here on the cast. But yeah, I think that is an important thing to highlight. And also, like, one, you can't know the full impact of whatever you're doing. Like, it is unknowable. And that you don't know how it can be fostered in other people as well, even if that's not your, like, initial intention or what you were trying to do.
Can't be fostered in other people either. I'm writing a lot of things down today. I'm getting so much from the show. Sheesh. Yeah.
And if other folks want to call in, 503-231-8187, we're talking about how do you keep hope alive and movement building in yourself, getting up another day, getting up another year, to be honest. 2022. Didn't want to say its name, but now it's here.
Now it's here, yeah. Keeping hope alive. Yes, 503-231-8187. I think in movement building especially, get a lot of people that come in at different like learning curves, you know, and like they come in from like different walks of life, and finding that shared interest that brings us all together, you know, like let's say you want to do something around reform, like, you know, it's just like kind of accepting that everyone comes in with different wealth of knowledge, you know.
Definitely. And like that, yeah, so much of it is like getting to experience other people, getting to connect with other people. I mean, that's something that like gets me excited in the work that I do, is I meet somebody new who's excited about the same stuff that I am. And it reminds me about why I care in the first place, because so much of the time it can feel like, boy, I sure am Sisyphus pushing this boulder up the hill every day, aren't I? But then you see somebody else and you remember why you even want to.
Exactly. Yes, that spark in the eye, for sure. And speaking of spark and hope, we do have Edie on the line. Can you hear us?
Yes, and I'm so glad that I can. The reason that I keep persevering under circumstances that doctors, scientists, other people say are physically, medically impossible, or that I keep hanging in there as a parent or as an activist, is because love is the reason for my life. It's who and why and how I am and what makes it worth it. And even when I am totally inadequate and do everything wrong, and with the current police-caused traumatic brain injury and cannot function as I used to, I can always experience and express and see the blessings for others of love, of integrity, of courage, of truth. And it helps that no matter how bad things seem, I can remember times in my life or times in world history where the impossible happened, where good prevailed. And whenever I have an open mind as a former field biologist, I can see examples in nature every day that teach me lessons and blessings of that mutual gift of grace of creation and all of us. And I see these incredible coincidences that defy my human logic and statistics. And those I take as affirmation that we are each here in our right time and place, and we belong together, and we can learn together and get healed together, and the very people that we might want to curse are the very people who are most blessing us in our growth. And so I just see examples all the time. Douglas fir trees that cannot stand alone by themselves, but are nurtured by the under the ground mycelium and nurtured by older trees, giving them the sunlight when they're in the shade. It's just seeing birds be kind to each other and protect each other. I've seen insects that cooperate, seeing how different water drops from different types of leaves form the exact chemical combination and pressure on the soil that is necessary for that whole community of underground organisms. It's just over and over, courage and examples, and that inspires me to love the next person, to forgive the next person, to stand up against the next lie, to speak the truth when I know I'll be rejected and punished for it. And then I have beloved Kebu, and it's never too late for folks to send in a thank you note and some money.
Thank you so much, Edie. We really, really appreciate it. You just painted such a beautiful picture. I love it.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You have a great rest of your day, Edie. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, we've gotten some good feedback about, you know, getting in touch with nature. And I think that that is so important. I mean, it's like become a cliche online now if you're like too deep into something to tell somebody to go touch grass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you you need to go get grounded.
Well, that's but
it's true.
It's true. Like, it even on the fact that that phrase comes out, you know, came out of the internet, something that's so detached from our physical, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, even there it's like go touch grass. You're like, and it's like obvious, it's, and I think it's a combination of you're losing your grace. You're not being graceful to other people. You're not being that to yourself. You're stressed.
Yeah.
Let's just ground ourselves, you know. I love this. And I think love is a very it's a very powerful thing. And there's a bell hooks quote where she says love is an action, never simply a feeling. And to show love and to act upon it is very powerful. And again, you gotta love yourself first in order to be able to be not so hard on yourself, so you can see the beauty and grace in nature and the birds and just like people walking by. And you know, we're all kind of have our different armors, but you know, it's not, we, you know, we're doing the best we can.
And you know, sometimes I like thinking about just history and like the history of everything, like that it is in our nature to love and to persist through times when we were all dying at, you know, 30 from various diseases.
You got a cough in the morning, you're dead in the afternoon, they say.
Still loving, still persisting,
yeah,
still, you know, doing the same things.
Beautiful.
Well, okay.
I feel very good.
I'm feeling very like contemplative. Restored. And kind nice. Of like I need to sit quietly for a little while just to process all of this stuff. But I do want to thank everyone who called in to chat with us today. This is The Gap. Full episode will be online, kbu.fm/thegap, if you missed any of it. But yeah, really appreciate everybody who called in. Really appreciate everyone who helped us out in our end of year membership.
Yes,
drive.
We made the membership. We made the goal.
We made the goal.
Yeah, woohoo! Thank you.
We love to make the goal, you guys. Thank you.
Live
proud
another day.
Yes. And yeah, and even if you didn't donate, you told somebody about it, you get a new listener on KBU. We loved it. We love that. So yeah, this is the end of the show. We'll say coming up next is Sprouts.
Yes, and then after that is Disability Justice, and some great programming afterwards, as well as Film at 11, which is, I love that. I love that show. It's so fun.
I love that it's never at 11.
Yeah, right. But yes, everything that Althea said and then some. Thank you all so much. And you can check out kboo.fm/thegap for show notes. And library of everything.
The library of things.
Library of things.
Get yourself a knife sharpener if that's what you need.
If that's what you need.
That's what I need. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Till next time.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Colleen MacDonald from Got Science, a podcast by the Union of Concerned Scientists. Today on Sprouts, our democracy at risk, the state of elections in the U.S. Voting rights expert Dr. Michael Latner details